All right, we're live on YouTube again. So welcome everyone to another episode of Emancipatory Education Now. Today, Victor is going to be leading the dialogue, so I'm going to go ahead and pass the mic over to him.
Hi, everyone. I'm super excited to be talking about this topic. I believe this topic needs to be addressed more in education, and I would like to introduce a topic. I'm going to share my screen so y'all can see my my screen as well. So today, previously, I sent out a copy of this article called Decolonization and Education, Locating Pedagogy and Self at the I do not know how to pronounce a word, but Interstices in Global Times, authored by Nina Asher. Here's the article, and here is the page that we will use to reference to. So this is a topic. Topic is going to be decolonization education introduction. So introduction. Events throughout global society have reinforced movements centered on traditional centered on liberation from traditional ways of governing. As agents in education, we must be critical in reflecting on education's role in reproducing the status quo. What constitutes appropriate or worthy knowledge to be taught in Western when Western education is rooted in colonial ties. A narrative is propelled in Western cultures, insiders, centered around civilizing ethnic and minority populations, outsiders, as a noble act. In reality, this attempt to civilize is seen and experienced by the outside population as forced assimilation and cultural diluting. Colonization is embedded in education. We must play a collaborative role to disentangle the effects of colonization in education and the change it has placed on our minds. So with me reading the introduction and introducing the article, I would like to transition and ask the panel, what was their initial reactions toward the article? I know that decolonization is a very heavy topic and there's a lot of layers to it. I know that it might be a new topic to some individuals as well. So what were y'all initial reactions towards it, please?
You know, I thought it was very interesting in the article, the way they were talking about how we unconsciously tend to other things. And, you know, he described going into a, or she described going into a cafe in India, I believe, and being, you know, somewhat shocked about how Western it seemed and how normal it seemed. And then, you know, she realized that she had been othering India unconsciously. She had been sort of picturing it as this different place. And I thought that was a really interesting way of looking at it. It definitely made me realize, you know, the situations like that in my own experience, but it's also very interesting because I think that there's this tension between almost between multiculturalism. And so, you know, recognizing that other cultures are different and, you know, recognizing that in many ways they can be very different from Western cultures and celebrating that. But then also this sense of like, are we othering cultures because we want them to be different, because we want them to there to be a standard against which we measure them. And I think that that was a very interesting sort of tension that this article brought up for me.
I completely agree as well. If other people from the panel can also react towards the article as well.
Yeah, thank you, Victor. And thank you, Anna, for that point, because I was actually about to address that as well. That really stood out to me, you know, the coffee shop where she said that, you know, she saw these hybrid names for the coffee drinks and she saw how it wasn't really reflective of, you know, India, like the India she knew and the India that she grew up in. So, you know, my initial reactions to this article was obviously first, I related to it because I'm a South Asian woman as well. And I have, you know, lived in the United States for a long time and I was born here. So I have gone to India for a vacation, and I have seen, you know, changes throughout the years. You know, every summer when I go back, it's like I see that, you know, there's, you know, more modern things going on, and there's so many changes. So I feel like a lot of people in India are also determined to come to the United States because of what they learned in India about the United States. You know, they learned that it's like a land of opportunity, and that, you know, everyone is able to turn out into like a new leaf and start fresh. And that's true. You know, the United States does provide a lot of opportunities to people, but I feel like, you know, there are still issues here, you know, like low income families and poverty. But, you know, a lot of people in India come with the belief that they can truly just change their lives if they work hard enough towards it. So, and I was also shocked with one of the statements in the article where the author basically said that a lot of people in Mumbai, which is a city in India, they didn't know that, you know, who Gandhi was or what he did. And I was really shocked about that because, you know, it is celebrated in India as a national holiday, his birthday. So I was really surprised that there are people in India that don't know who he is, or they don't know the impact he has on different historical events. So it was a really interesting article. So thank you, Victor, for allowing us to read it.
No problem. No problem. And thank you for your input as well.
So just following kind of what Vaishnavi said, I actually also, that stood out to me in the article, how a lot of students in India didn't know who Gandhi was. I thought that was just something like that was really shocking to me. And then kind of following what Anna said about othering different like countries and people, I think it was really interesting how the author mentioned that one of the main ways to start decolonizing your thoughts and bringing that into the education is to resist like the re-implication of like the colonizing forces, and like don't other others and don't other yourself, and mm-hmm. bring it into the education system as a teacher or any role. It's important to like make sure the students don't see that there's like East or West, or there's two different sides. Like mm-hmm. there's just many different cultures and identities that are all like individual in their own way, but there's not one way and there's not others. And I thought that was like a good thing to remember when bringing that into like the education.
For sure, for sure. I completely agree with how you brought out the topic about othering. I believe that it's important not to other people as well. And because by doing that, then that just justifies maltreatment, you know, because you wouldn't do something to someone who's your own flesh and blood, let's say, you know? So I think that's a great topic as well.
Yeah, stick to this othering line, I think. The first thing I thought about when I saw the word decolonization, like what actually is colonization mean, right? So mm-hmm. I thought back to, you know, history books, and we're talking about colonials, right? A group of people came from another country and they landed in what is now the United States of America. And as explorers, typically from a European country, and they go into this other land and they occupy it, or a land that's occupied by other people, and they take it over to expand their own country's control in new regions, right? Like they're trying to grow. And then the purpose of that is for them to like take over new land. So the people who are there, they want them to assimilate to, I think Anna, you said like standards of their own culture, right? So their idea is to create even more of their own people with the intent to subvert the people who are already existing in the land. So if we're thinking about this idea of othering and decolonization and being able to suss out, you know, how are we othering in a school system or in a classroom? I think we need to like take root of, well, what are the values that we have in our own school system, and do they serve us, right? Mm-hmm. I think I was writing down a bunch of examples and from my own teaching experience, mm-hmm. And I for sure have not been a perfect teacher, right? Like I taught in elementary school. I had kids like walking in a straight line, sometimes with their hands behind their backs. And like, I would tell them, okay, put a bubble in your mouth, like so that they could be quiet. Right. And what do we think of when we think of people who have their hands behind their back?
We usually associate them with, you know, criminal activity, something other, which talks about the process of othering as well.
Yeah, sure. So to control, right? Like we have people put their hands behind their back to control them if they're criminals, right? And then I mm-hmm. see that on school, like in schools. And I mean, I cringe at some of the things that I did as a teacher, like learning how to be a teacher that I would never do again. Because of what it says that I value of the student.
That actually brings me to a really good, I appreciate you for sharing all that. That actually really brings me up to the second part of the question. How do any of y'all have examples of colonization within education that you've seen or that you can take or stories perhaps?
So I don't right now have like a personal example, but something the author mentioned that kind of ties in what Abby mentioned is I never really thought about like the actions that are done by students in schools that kind of represent that. And the author mentioned how in schools, a lot of people have to like learn the like English tongue or like text mm-hmm. by heart and like be really obedient. And just at the time as a student, like you never really think about you never think much about it, but now like kind of reflecting like a lot, especially with Abby said, like in my experience teaching too, I did stuff like that. And when you think about it, it just doesn't seem like what you wanted it to be. And like how she mentions reciting like stuff in the English tongue and being obedient and speaking in front of audiences, like these things are really acts of like colonization we don't really recognize.
Mm-hmm. I would totally agree. And I really want to talk more about how the educational system really tries to strip the tongue of anyone that doesn't speak English. You know, it's you see like in assessments, students who cannot perfectly speak English are commonly sometimes misassessed. Or might be put in different programs or different academic tracks because they aren't as fluid as other people, you know? And I just want to bring that to people's attention as well. Does anyone have another example?
I just love the, Amina, you brought up the piece about how students have to be obedient. And just to pull it back to the bubble example, right? So to have kids like put a bubble in their mouth like that so that they wouldn't talk, right? So if they would be quiet. And it occurred to me that having them do that, it was defining for them what their place in the school was and sometimes how they might measure what doing school right is. Right? Like if I'm quiet or if I'm being quiet, then I'm being good. And then I'm being good at school. And then my teacher values me more. And then that's what I should be. And what I was doing was silencing them, right? Making sure that they were being quiet and being silent and valuing that. And I think to decolonize is to make sure that the people who don't have a lot of power within a system have more voice, right? So if you think about in a classroom, typically the teacher is the person in power. So how do you give students more voice? If in the classroom you have a lot of students who are English learners and they feel disempowered within that system, how do you give them more voice? And it's not, as Amina said, like say that they need to have this like high command of English in order to participate in school.
And, you know, Abby, just to touch on what you said, because it really was making me think about, you know, the purposes of education. It's really interesting because I do think that, you know, a lot of traditional forms of education, you know, it can be very constraining for children because the more sort of like traditional theory way of learning is like the teacher stands up and they lecture in front of the students and the students take notes. And then the expectation is that the teacher will be like, okay, what's this? And they'll just be able to repeat back what the teacher told them. But it's really interesting because you then you look in like the job market and like what people will say they want kids to learn and what they want their, you know, employees to learn. People, you look at job descriptions and be like, we want people that are innovative. We want them that are them to be task oriented. We want them to be collaborative. You know, they need to be able to take initiative. You know, you those are like buzzwords in the job market and, you know, and in other places as well. You know, everyone wants people who can be leaders and who can, you know, take on new things. And so then you have to ask, you know, is our education system, now, I don't think that the only purpose of schooling should be to help kids get a job. I don't, you know, I think that that's a very limiting idea. But if one of the purposes of education is to help kids succeed, you know, and have careers, we're not even preparing them for that. And many people would say that that's the primary goal of education, you know, the more traditional view. And I don't think that that's true. I think that there's a lot more, but I do think that, you know, it's like, we're not, what we teach in schools many times doesn't align with what we say we want, you know, out of we say we want kids to grow up to be, you know, we say we want them to have critical thinking skills. We say we want them to be able to do, to work in groups and work with other people. We say we want them to be able to, you know, look at the media and the stuff that they are reading and look at it with a critical eye. But are we really teaching them, you know? And I would think that part of decolonizing education, to bring it back around, is bringing more of those things in. Because like you said, Abby, you know, it's about giving people that don't have a voice a voice. So it's about giving our students a voice so that they can stand up for themselves and they can speak up.
Yeah, Anna, that was so powerful. I mean, like you brought like really great points about how, you know, is the school system really preparing us, you know, to go beyond, you know, we're going over to work a job and meeting people and understanding other people's viewpoints and adapting to change. Because I feel like, you know, personally, my schooling system, it was a great experience, but I do feel like our exams and our tests were a lot about memorizing, as Amina said, specific dates and memorizing specific people and not really being critical about what that, how that person impacted, you know, a specific event and how they impacted how we view certain things. So, you know, for me, like, I definitely think like decolonization, when I think about that, I look at it as like an effort to consider the various viewpoints on a historical event or a historical person rather than just one viewpoint. So I recently watched a TED Talk discussing Immanuel Kant. So I took a philosophy class at San Jose State. And, you know, he's seen as like this father of morality and human rights and all these amazing buzzwords and how he's really impacted philosophy and our understanding of different morals and what's good and bad. But he was also racist against Black people. And he said some really ignorant and hurtful things about them. So, you know, personally, I didn't know about that until I watched that TED Talk. So a lot of students don't have time to, you know, go back and do research about something. Whatever they learn is going to be at school. So whatever we're teaching them during that school time is going to be what they will carry throughout their life. So I think it's really important to make sure that we are able to give students different viewpoints about things and have them make their own decision rather than just pushing this one opinion or pushing this one idea and testing them on it and seeing if they understand it.
Yeah, Anna, that was very powerful what you were talking when you were talking about empowering students. I really resonate with that as I feel like we should enter education as agents of change and agents who can empower students. And I totally agree with you. I think that was beautifully said. We can go to the next question. So Decolonization typically is a very complex idea with multiple layers. But if a student were to come up to you and ask you, hey, teach, or hey, Victor, can you talk to me about decolonization? How would you basically talk to them about it? How would you introduce the topic?
I think, just explaining, the way I would explain it to the student is that many of the events that we study and learn about in our history textbooks is very Eurocentric. You know, we talk about specific leaders in the British Empire or, leaders in the person that took over a piece of land, rather than talking about the revolutionaries that went against the empire. So, again, kind of connecting back to, how I did my schooling, a lot of the times, we talked about the colonies, the 13 colonies in US history, and then we would talk about slavery for maybe a week or so. And we wouldn't go into much depth, and we would be quizzed on the colonies and, what are the 13 colonies? Can you identify them? And all that, rather than, focusing on the fact that there were so many people that were negatively impacted by, the civil war and the civil rights movement. So I feel like a lot of students don't even know that there's this idea of decolonization that's happening right now in our education system. So I feel like, we need to speak more about this. And I'm not personally not seeing that spoken at all. I'm not sure if that's true with you guys, but until Victor, addressed decolonization and until I read this article, I haven't really heard about this happening in the education system.
Thanks for starting us off, Vaishnavi. I had a challenge with this question because it's so complex, and I typically work with younger students. And so I was thinking, how would I explain decolonization to an 8-year-old? And I probably wouldn't do it in one sitting, right? I think I would embed it throughout the whole year and explain to students, we see through media and through our textbooks and through the books that you read and through movies and the news that sometimes there's this single story about certain people. I mean, about all different groups of people. And how can we understand people as not just, or a group of people as just not the monolithic description of what they are, but gather different stories around them. And so I would use picture books to show, look, there are these perspectives about choose any group. We're in Black History Month. So let's talk about, different kinds of stories that come from Black culture, right? I think that's, you mentioned Vaishnavi, slavery, and oftentimes, and I was totally guilty of this, and I must sound like a horrible teacher. I'm just telling you all the things that I did wrong, but I looked at my, classroom library, and what are the stories about in my classroom library about Black people? It's about their struggle. It's about the civil rights movement. It's about slavery, and none about all of the great things and great inventions and great pieces to our culture that Black people brought to, my existence and my students' existence. And so I think that's one piece of it, is to just show that, you can't just describe a group of people with one description, that there's just, everyone is so layered and every group of people is so layered. And then we can start to decolonize at least the beliefs we have that have been, what we've been conditioned to believe about certain people.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. It's a very dense topic. It's very complex, multiple layers. I don't think that you could do it in one sitting. as well. I think to spread it out throughout the year would be a great way to do it. Let me see, how would I introduce decolonization to a student? I would, I would tell the student that the reality that they see in right now, you know, it had to come from, it had a history. And that history tragically was through, you know, land occupation by indigenous genocide. It was through the kidnapping of Black folk from Africa and then kidnapped and brought over to the United States, you know, and then everything that happened after that through imperialist agendas and imperialist processes, as well as globalization trends, have also just have created the reality that we see. I know it's a very complex topic because with decolonization, you also have to bring the topic up about decolonizing yourself too as well. You also have to stop thinking like the colonizer yourself too. You also got to treat yourself with more compassion as well. So there's multiple layers to decolonization. I don't think that it could be taught in one lesson, but I really do agree with you, Abby, about spreading the topic out throughout, you know, a semester or the whole entire year. I think that's a great way to do it.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think it cannot be discussed in just one lesson. And I think if I were to approach the topic of colonization to a student, I think I would definitely emphasize like all the different cultures and all the different identities. Because I feel like when you're in school, you learn a very Eurocentric perspective, and you only hear kind of what Abby mentioned, one side of a culture and like one story. And even like my culture, I heard one thing about it all through elementary school, and that's what I believed until I did my own research and learned through my own experiences. So I think I would definitely kind of emphasize learning different stories and perspectives. And even in the article, the author mentions that her students didn't realize that their clothes were made from people in different countries, and they didn't ever really look at the tag. So it's kind of like just emphasizing that there's so much more, and emphasizing in a way that it's not from an other perspective, but from like, we're all one, and like uniting the cultures together more so. Because when she mentioned that her students weren't aware about where everything they owned came from, they never really thought about it. That was kind of like, it kind of opened my eyes to how much students really don't think about, or even me as a student didn't think much about like everything other than where we were.
Yeah, I completely agree with what everyone's been saying. And you know, Abby, I know you mentioned that you felt like a bad teacher, but I think like in many ways, like recognizing those kinds of things is what makes you such a good teacher, right? Because part of like decolonization, I think, has to start with the teachers, because we, you know, have grown up in this culture and we've grown up in this education system. And so part of the first step is we have to see how are we, you know, in our minds, almost decolonize our thinking, you know, and how are we affected by this? And what things do we sort of take for granted? And I think, you know, part of being a teacher is always looking back and saying, what could I do differently? What am I taking for granted that maybe I shouldn't be taking for granted? And, you know, to bring it back to how I would explain decolonization to a student, I think the other thing to maybe think about is that nothing is neutral, you know? And so colonization, basically the education system isn't neutral, because someone had to pick what's taught and someone decides what the standards are. And, you know, people are biased. That's just a fact of life. So part of decolonization is realizing that what you're learning isn't neutral. The curriculum, what's chosen, how it's presented, that doesn't happen in a vacuum. And so it can't be neutral. And so once you start to recognize that, then it helps to stop, you stop taking things for granted and just assuming that this is the way it is. This is what, this is the way we look at certain people. This is the, what we read about certain people. And it's like, but why do we do that? And so I think for students to start, you know, decolonizing things, part of it is, you know, teaching them to always ask questions and always ask, you know, why are we learning this? Why does someone want us to learn this? What's the benefit of learning this? And not just assuming that what they're given is, you know, that, that, that what they're learning is just something that can't be changed or that, you know, shouldn't be changed.
I completely agree with you. I believe that students should never stop asking. I think that's a great point as well. I agree with everyone's input and I appreciate everyone for sharing. Thank you so much. We'll go on to the next question. So does decolonization serve a purpose in education or is it contradictory to the institution? Anyone want to give it a shot first?
I think it goes back to what Anna was asking earlier and talking about earlier. If we define the purpose of education as it stands in the United States to produce worker bees, then decolonization does not serve that purpose, right? So I had this reflection earlier on in the conversation, but I didn't know how to like pipe it in, but it bothers me or it worries me when I see images in the news of classrooms who have gone back to in person, because you see all of the desks in rows, right? And your environment largely impacts how you move in a space. So if students are all in rows, what will that encourage teachers or how will that encourage teachers to teach? Of course, they won't be able to collaborate. They won't be able to like sit close together, work on the same poster. So how will that impact the teaching that's happening in a classroom where students are sitting all in rows? And we know that that is an image that comes, that is seen of American classrooms all the way back into, you know, the end of the 19th century, right, of rows, but the purpose of education was different back then. And if we're really looking at what the job market wants and what we hope students come out of classrooms with, then we do need to decolonize that belief of like, oh, I'm just going to regurgitate something to you. And then you're going to regurgitate it back and you're going to get on this test and it's going to be multiple choice. So largely this question, I think, relies on how you define what the purpose of our classrooms are and what education is supposed to be like.
Yeah, I agree with you, Abby. And what stood out to me from what you said is, you know, again, like sitting in rows, that's so true because I feel like all classrooms that I've been in is rows. And there are those few instances where the teacher says, you know, get into a group and work on this presentation. And again, you know, it's when you're working on the presentation, you're going to be graded on it. And the information that you provide is all going to be the same things that you learned in the class. And it's not really much about, you know, researching outside of what has been taught in the class. So I feel like, you know, connecting it back to the question, I feel like decolonization does serve a purpose because, you know, students need to be given all the information and, you know, all the text written by everyone in the event. You know, not just the empire, but the slaves as well. And people should read about how a slave, for example, viewed a certain person rather than how like an aristocrat or a government official viewed that same person. So again, like, I feel like, you know, the way we learn about certain things can be heavily impacted by our textbooks and what the teacher chooses to focus on, because, you know, the teacher can also design their curriculum on their by themselves. And as Anna mentioned earlier, you know, it is the responsibility of a good teacher to recognize, you know, what could be classified as colonizing and what could be classified as decolonizing. So yeah, I feel like within a classroom setting, it can get a little complicated, but I think once you figure out a good curriculum that kind of allows students to view all perspectives, then that would be a much more useful educational journey.
I completely agree with everyone. Does anyone else want to dig in the question before I answer as well? Okay, so we're all good. Let me see. Do I think that decolonization serves a purpose in education? Yes, I think it does, because you know, education as an institution emerged in the United States as a result of the French and American war, which actually sought to use education as a way of realizing and achieving the egalitarian and democratic ideals formed by those revolutions. So I think, you know, as much people already talked about it in this this web series right now, you know, I don't think that education or schools should only be focused on producing worker bees, as was talked about. I believe that there's more to students, there's more to people in general than just making sure that they can reinforce the economy. I believe that, you know, I believe that we don't need to keep on reinforcing the status quo. I believe that we can be different. I believe we should be different, because if we don't change things now, you know, who says that there is going to be a tomorrow if we can't first live in the present, which is today, which is right now. Okay, we have one more question from the from YouTube, one of the comments. How can we involve students in researching and writing the histories and stories of their communities?
You know, Abby, do you want to go? Okay, I'm sorry. I really like that question, because I think that, you know, one of the things about like decolonization is that it's encouraging students to ask questions, right? And we've been talking about that, you know, ask questions, don't just take things for granted. And I think that students are more likely, when they want to learn about something, they'll go and learn about it, right? But you have to interest them. And so I think that, you know, getting students interested in researching their communities, making space for them to talk about their communities, giving them time in class to look things up and really look into their background, that is interesting to students, because they want to find out about themselves and they want to tell other people about themselves and their stories. And I think that that can be a really big part of decolonizing education, is just giving students the space to learn about themselves and to do that independent research, and to affirm them for that, instead of saying, no, we're all going to learn about this and everyone's going to do this and I'm going to tell you the information and there's no need for initiative on your part. And so I think I really like that question. I think that's a really great thing that needs to be brought into schools.
Well, I love, Anna, your connection to students sharing their stories of their community with how they view themselves. And I'm going to bring it back to something else you said earlier on too, about how the resources aren't neutral, that people have curated them, or someone has curated them for a classroom, for a school district, And sometimes those resources are very limiting to this effort of asking students to expand on their communities, right? And I think one really great venue for students to explore who they are and their communities is to have them write family stories, and to, you know, get their history, their family history, learn the struggles and the joys that their families had as they lived in the United States or elsewhere. I think that's like so hugely important, but not always valued the same way as a textbook report or a report on, you know, a specific group of heroes is. And so the other piece of that is whose stories do we value? Do we need to have the same reports every single year from the students? Or can we start to value the skills and the lessons that students learn from just exploring their families and maybe even their own physical community, you know, where they live in San Jose or Fremont or Oakland, and learning about their actual town?
I think that was beautifully said by you too. I really appreciate you for responding to that question. Let's go on to the next. So we're running out of time shortly, but if y'all still are interested, we can still keep on having this dialogue. There's only about two more questions left. So how would efforts to decolonize education look like?
Yeah, so this question I had to think about because I feel like it is ideal to, you know, try to decolonize our curriculum, but it is also, you know, we have to think about like how it can be done and whether we have enough resources to do so. But ideally, I feel like maybe, you know, have up to date textbooks. So for example, you know, my sister and I have a 5-year age gap. And she's in ninth grade right now. So when I was in ninth grade about 5 years ago, I had a US history textbook and she has the same exact US history textbook. And I feel like there's have been so many events and so many changes in the way we think within those 5 years, especially, you know, with certain movements that have been happening, the Me Too movement and a Black Lives Matter movement. Those have really picked up momentum over the past few years. So I feel like her, even though we're in the same generation, I feel like the time now, they have more ideas and opinions about certain things than we did 5 years ago. So it would be ideal to have textbooks that reflect that and reflect those current events. And I also think that, you know, we should encourage having extra research time during class, because we did discuss previously that I think Anna said that when students are really interested in something, they'll go out of their way to research on that. But there are many students that might be interested in it, but they just can't research more about it because they're so busy with, you know, work and working relationships and all that sort of stuff. So I feel like providing that space during a certain class period for students to research on certain people that they think are important, or giving them time to debate about a specific issue and allowing them to see multiple viewpoints would be a first step in maybe decolonizing the curriculum.
Yeah, great point, Vaishnavi. When you brought up introducing students to more viewpoints, you know, different perspectives, so they can stop thinking so narrow-minded, I guess you can say. I think that a good way. Let me see the question one more time. How would efforts to decolonize education look like? I feel that efforts to decolonize education would look like, instead of going for a very, very individualistic way of teaching, you know, I feel like more involvement with with other peers as well, you know, because, you know, I don't know about y'all, but I love learning from my peers, from my classmates. I love learning from their questions too, because I might not be thinking the same thing that they're thinking. So if they ask a question that that I was never going to be in my mind, you know, so I love learning from my peers as well. I feel like we can also implement more equity measures, or more equity assistance mechanisms, or tools that we can use within school to hopefully, you know, even the social playing field a little bit. I think that those would be some great ways too. Maybe also a way to decolonize education would probably a good way that could really be done would be to eliminate the bathroom options within schools. You know, a lot of restrooms only have the male and the female options.
Oh, I think you're frozen, Victor. Well, I imagine that he's saying a lot of lists. You froze, Victor.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. Are we back?
You're back.
Okay, cool. I'm sorry about that. My connection's lagging.
No, but I appreciate you listed off a lot of different ways to decolonize the system. And I think that what I'm learning from that is that there's so many entry points into this. I mean, Vaishnavi, you talked about curriculum. Victor, you talked about even, like, you know, what does access to the bathrooms mean? Are we, you know, being exclusionary by just having gendered bathrooms? Mm-hmm. And the point is, there's so many ways that you can enter into the work of decolonizing, not only your classroom, but your school. And I'm going to, like, bring it back to the idea of voice and put a wondering out there, you know, in your community, who has a voice and who doesn't have a voice, and how can you shift that? You can talk about parents in specific. I know when I went to school, it was the same parents who were volunteering in the classroom. I could see the same parents who were, you know, on the different committees. And to a certain degree, that brings power to the school. So how do you bring more power to people who don't have it in the parent community? Or take a look at how you're communicating with parents in general. Is the only time you talk to a parent when the kid is in trouble? That's an issue. What does that say to the parent, and what does that say to the kid when you say, I'm going to talk to your mom and dad? Rather than, what if you talk to every parent about all the good things that their kids are doing? That could shift the dynamic completely.
I agree with you, and thank you for sharing. I will open the question up to the rest of the panel as well.
I just want to say I really like Abby's point. I think that's a really good, like, thing to consider that I've never really, like, even thought about when it comes to parents. And going off the point of giving everyone a voice, I just want to say, like, regarding earlier, I feel like I learned best in school when I heard the perspective of my peers and my friends. And even when it came to them talking about their own cultures and their own communities, I feel like you really learn the most when you experience it firsthand, or you hear about firsthand experiences. I think just the emphasis of giving everyone a voice, and then also giving students time to express their feelings in class and everything, rather than just, like, maybe memorizing a textbook or something, but really experiencing that voice is really essential.
For sure. Thank you, everyone, for sharing. We're going to go to the last question. What are the limitations placed on our minds due to colonization? Can education be a tool used to decolonize one's mind? How? I know that's a very heavy question, so y'all can take it in chunks if y'all like, or y'all can address it right head on. Would anyone like to go first? No problem, no problem. What are the limitations placed on our minds due to colonization? I feel that colonization has really manipulated people into being very narrow-minded, being very individualistic, being very about me. Well, I know that here in the United States, you know, Western culture typically tends to be very individualistic. I know that Eastern cultures typically tend to be collectivist. So I feel that here in the United States, colonization has really, really made people, or made, I guess, quote unquote, U.S. Americans very capitalistic in the way they think, in the way they move, in the way they treat other people. I think that education be used as a tool. I believe that education can be used as a tool, but I also want to emphasize that education school is also has colonial ties to it as well. So we should be mindful of that too, that it is education is also an institution. But yes, I believe that education can be used as a tool to decolonize one's mind by being more mindful of your actions, by being more respectful on how you move throughout society. Your actions have consequences, as well as you know, everything has a place, everything has a history as well. So you weren't the first one to do something, and you probably won't be the last one to do it as well. Well, that's my two cents.
Yeah, I agree with you, Victor. I think you brought up some really great points, and you know, I feel like, as you said before, this is a heavy question, but I do think that education can be used as a tool to kind of decolonize our curriculum and how students are learning, because, you know, I believe that students really need to be able to support their opinions with facts and what they learned, you know, not just saying what they learned in school, but why they believe what they're learning is correct, or why they believe what they're learning is incorrect. So again, said this before, so you know, students should just not memorize what happened during a specific event, but see how it impacted people and see those specific ideas and how it would be carried if it happened today, right? Because there are so many events that happened in the past that we're just so shocked that they even happened, and we could never see it happening right now. So I think, you know, I do remember a specific instance where my history teacher, it was a really eye-opening history class. And, you know, she showed us some videos of the civil rights movement. And it was hard to watch, but I feel like I learned so much from that. And it really made me respect the things that people have gone through, especially in US history. You know, not just talking about the presidents, not just talking about, you know, people that were higher in the social system, but also people that were suffering and had to basically give up and sacrifice a lot to get to where we are today. And I feel like this isn't even like just an issue in the United States. I feel like even in other countries, like, for example, in the article, you know, we got a little bit more insight into how education is like in India. So I do see that, you know, there are many events that happened. The British Empire was ruthless against the Indian people before they got their independence in 1945. So, you know, there was a massacre that happened. It's called the Amritsar Massacre, if anyone would like to see. And it was just a horrific moment. Like, a lot of people died. And, you know, you see two different opinions. The British people thought it was, you know, a great thing. They thought, oh, you know, like the British Empire showed their power and they showed the Indian people that they shouldn't mess with them and not mess with the rules. And then obviously the Indian people saw this as like a tragic event. They saw the British Empire as these evil people. So I feel like, again, just making sure that you see both sides of a specific event and not just limiting your insight into just one perspective.
Yeah, I appreciate you sharing the experience of how it was difficult for you to watch that video. I think this question is so challenging because, we're on the show for a reason, right? We believe that education can be emancipatory. And that's the whole point. We want to free ourselves from colonialists' impressions and impacts. And yet it's that discomfort, I think, that people need to go through in order for it to actually make a transformation. And so can education help decolonize the mind? Yes. And ultimately it is on the individual to do the internal work and be able to live with that discomfort and then see, you know, what sacrifices do I actually have to make in order to right some wrongs in service of justice, right? Like I'm part complicit in this, some colonialist systems within my classroom or in my job or in some of my relationships. And once I recognize that, do I have the, you know, moral fortitude to say, okay, even though this is going to be uncomfortable, even though I have to sacrifice something, I'm going to change my behavior, change my language, change, you know, the way I interact and I'm in community with other people because it's the right thing to do. And I think that's hard. I think there's potential for it and it's hard.
You know, I really liked what both of you said, Abby and Vaishnavi, about how it's uncomfortable, because I think that it is very uncomfortable, right? Because it's very hard to change and it's very hard to recognize that you may be complicit in some of these systems. But at the same time, I think being uncomfortable drives learning, right? Not just in terms of decolonizing education, but in terms of education in general. If you're never uncomfortable, then you're never going to truly learn, right? So in many ways, I think that's why decolonizing education actually can fit really well with education and why it can be so useful, you know, for students, because it makes them uncomfortable. And so just by doing that, it's driving learning. It's driving them to ask questions. It's driving them to discuss. And that's really important for the learning process to happen.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think that's one of the main reasons education can be used as a tool. And I think taking the role and being like uncomfortable, I think will help others, especially like if you're a teacher and you're uncomfortable, but you're helping your students kind of learn it and kind of get used to it too. So I think education does play a huge role, because if students learning it from a young age, it is easier as they get older to learn these different perspectives and hopefully normalize it more.
Thank you everyone for sharing. I believe that was very powerful, and I really resonate with you, Anna, what you said as well. That was very beautiful words. So thank you everyone to who tuned in to watch this episode of this web series. And I thank you to my fellow panel for coming, reading the article and discussing with me about this topic, because I feel very passionate about this topic. But I also want to leave y'all with a call to action. So the effects of colonization can be experienced by the narrow thinking developed in the human mind. As we return to society, we must be more mindful in how we interact with each other. Decolonization begins with decolonizing one's own mind. Let yourself
think his computer is getting decolonized. You froze a little, Victor.
Oh, we're good. Are we good? Yeah. Okay. Hey, my bad. I'm sorry. You know, I'm struggling right here with the Wi-Fi. But anyways, did y'all hear my call to action? No?
Just part of it.
Okay, gotcha. I'll read it one more time. Okay, call to action. The effects of colonization can be experienced by the narrow thinking developed in the human mind. As we return to society, we must be more mindful in how we interact with each other. Decolonization begins with decolonizing one's own mind. Let yourself heal. Perfection has no example. Let yourself care. Greed is a learned behavior when one views the world as a competition. I want to say thank you. I want to say thank you to my panel. Thank you to anyone viewing this. And any last reactions to this whole entire topic or the last call to action that I just said right now.
Well, thanks so much, Victor, for facilitating today's dialogue. I'm going to go ahead and